What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another episode of the Smart Guy Moment Smack Talk Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Tony Mango. Joining me, as always, is Callum Wiggins.
He hit him with a flying leg kick.
Among other things. Somebody's getting their ass whipped tonight. So, this is an edition of
the sandbox, Tony.
This is Miss the Smark, our segment that we have done two, I think, of in the past. I'm pretty sure we did December Dismember and No Holds Barred were the two that we had done. We might have done a third one that I'm blanking on right now. But Miss the Smark is our segment that is dedicated to checking something out in the world of pro wrestling that is either infamously bad or famously good or a very noteworthy historical moment or show or whatever that we hadn't actually seen before, or at least one of us hadn't seen before. All three of these so far at this point were things that I hadn't seen, but also I think that you might have seen this already before, right?
Oh yeah, I've definitely seen Heroes of Wrestling.
I don't think that Rob, by the way, is not able to join us because of a hurricane. We'll talk about a different hurricane when we get into this. But he expresses his thoughts about, you know, we might be able to get him to like leave a comment with his thoughts or something. Basically, what we're doing here is we got a chance to watch Heroes of Wrestling. This came out October 10th, 1999. And it's considered one of the absolute worst pay-per-views in the history of professional wrestling. So, of course, it was like, well, you know, either it's going to be so bad that it's good, or it's so bad that it's god-awful bad, and oh my god, you need to see this to kind of reset your brain and go, okay, yeah, it's so much better what we get now and whatnot. It is a mess, and we're going to break it down here. We're going to basically kind of treat this a little bit like a pay-per-view point would be with the review side of things. Not that we did like a fan ounce table. I'm so glad that we didn't do a fan ounce table because this took me four times watching this that I had to stop and then just do something else. So we're going to talk about what happens in here. Obviously, we're not going to break it down in the same fashion of a pay-per-view point like the post shows do, where we're like, and why did this person win? Because this should set up this and whatever. But we'll talk about, you know, the full card and all of our thoughts. And if you have checked out Heroes of Wrestling, definitely let us know what you think about this by leaving a comment below. If you haven't, then I recommend either you listen to this podcast to make your decision of whether or not you should check it out, or that you check it out and come back and then listen to our point of view. But as we go along here and we tell us what we think about all of this and stuff, keep in mind, if you enjoy this podcast, let us know by not even just leaving a comment, but also hitting the like button on Twitter. I got Twitter on my mind. I got verified on Twitter. So now I'm all like, woo, look at that. I'm a blue checkmark guy. And yeah, hit the like button on YouTube. Make sure that you are subscribed on this YouTube channel. If you haven't already done that, set up your email alerts. That way you know when we do go live for those pay-per-view points, that you get those emails to let you know that we're actually broadcasting at that point. If you want to help us out on the monetary side of things, we'll get to that a little bit later on. We'll talk about those plugs and stuff. But let's start getting into this. Now, this was a suggestion from you.
Yeah, I know.
And I gotta say, god damn it, this was fucking brutal.
I know, exactly. It's part of the reason I wanted to do it is because I shouldn't be the only guy that's subjected himself to this on this podcast. Like, everyone needs to I think that realistically, and your mileage may vary depending on if you have watched it, I think everyone should watch this pay-per-view if you're a wrestling fan. And also, and when I say that, I don't mean someone who just like watches
casual
every now and again and stuff. Yeah, there's more casual. If you're like a deep, like committed wrestling fan, you should watch this in the same way that you should watch Batman and Robin.
Yeah, or The Room. Like, you know, The Room's more fun.
oh, don't get me wrong. This is absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a bit about the background of this because I've looked into it in the past and listened to podcasts as well talking about it. So there's plenty of material out there to get a bit of a understanding. So this was obviously put together in October 10th, 1999. So it's in the, I wouldn't say the peak of the Monday Night Wars, but it's at this point in time, WCW is big, but it's on the come down. And WWF is rising, going into what will be, until more recent times, their most successful financial year in the company's history. Like, this is peak Austin, peak Rock, all of the stuff going on, like, and WCW. They're still riding the momentum wave of the NWO, but Goldberg's essentially done because the streak's over. Everything is getting super political backstage. They're about to bring in Russo.
Oof.
If they haven't already. So, yeah, the wheels are about to come off of WCW. But essentially, and also ECW's playing its part as well, and it's doing well on pay-per-view and stuff. So, essentially, wrestling at this point in time is hot. And so the promoter, or the person that put together the show, I don't think he was actually the promoter. I think he's the promoter, but he wasn't the booker. I think they brought in a separate booker for him. But Billy Stone decided that, hey, I want to take a slice of that wrestling is super over pie, and let's put on a show, see if we can get a pay-per-view sorted, call it Heroes of Wrestling. And the idea was to be a nostalgia-driven event highlighting some of the most sought-after free agents. I say sought-after, most available,
yeah.
and well-known free agents on the market to take part of this quote-unquote super show. And the premise was that if it got to around about 40,000 pay-per-view buys, then they would probably have enough funding and enough seeming interest behind the concept to move forward and do multiple shows going forward and be more like a touring thing, bringing in legends every now and again. And who knows, if they'd survived two more years, they would have gotten plenty of WCW and ECW guys coming in, because that's they die pretty soon afterwards. But this show ended up getting about 29,000 pay-per-view buys, which was, funnily enough money for this to break even. So they didn't actually lose money on this show. So good on them for that.
I would have been shocked to hear about that. I mean, I thought that they would have gone under.
Yeah, but this is among the worst. Well, I say among, it probably is. I haven't seen every wrestling show, but of the wrestling shows I've seen, this is probably the worst I've ever witnessed.
It sounds like that you're being hyperbolic about it, but it's true. If you've not watched this is terrible. There's not a good thing on this show, and that's across the board. Whether it's, there's not a single good move that happens on here.
Barely any moves that happen.
Right. There's barely any moves. The promos are atrocious. Granted, I'll give them a little bit a tiny bit of slack when it comes to this, but the visuals of everything, the only copies that I could find were really bad, because it's like, there, it's on YouTube. I found like a torrent of it, because I couldn't find the, like, a DVD or anything, but
it was that bad at the time.
It seems like it was. So it's, I'm not like, I could only find a bad copy of a VHS that's a copy of a copy of a copy. It probably was awful to begin with. So there's just like the tiniest smidge of I'm sure it was slightly better than what the copy was that I had watched, but can't be that much better. And the commentary is terrible. The card is just, I'll say this too. On paper, some of this stuff doesn't seem that bad.
It made a lot of sense, some of the matches and some of the people they brought in, because these are people who are well known at the time. And don't get me wrong, nostalgia was not in vogue at this point in time as much as it is in 2022.
Yeah.
But there was still a pining for kind of more classical wrestlers, people that were in the, like, the NWA era and the rock and roll wrestling boom. So I can understand why they brought in who they brought in. Of course, some of the people they did bring in, I can understand why they brought in, and they probably immediately regretted it as soon as they turned up at the show. But
yeah, there's some golden age names here that are WWE Hall of Famers and, you know, noteworthy superstars that, you know, they could sell a crowd, and they can, especially for like an indie show, that you could be like, okay, I get why they booked some of the things here. It's just, to use like a food analogy, since I like to use those because everybody eats, it's like if you said to me, okay, well, we're going to make a really good dessert here. So we've got sugar, and we've got chocolate, and we've got peanut butter, and we've got butter, and you know, a little bit of salt to bring out the taste and whatever. And then we took a turd and just threw it in there, and you're like, oh no, you ruined it. I can't eat any of it, you know? Because from top to bottom, the moment this starts until, and I'm not even joking here, until the last frame of this, it is terrible. So we are going to break this down moment by moment. I have, let's see, how many notes do I have here? What's the word count on this thing? I wrote down, because I started to get to a point where I was just kind of basically writing down, fuck this match and whatever, about 1,000 words worth of notes, according to this. With the first being, Dutch Mantel and some other guy on commentary. Who the fuck is this guy? Am I supposed to know who this guy is?
Okay, so I can fill in a bit of the background here. So this guy is Randy Rosenbloom. And he was a friend of Billy Stone, someone he'd worked with on some other sporting ventures and stuff like that. He's like has a sports commentary background in like I think he's done some like college football, tennis, just like he's kind of an all-rounder. And so he was brought in to do this wrestling event. Originally, it was supposed to be the commentary team was supposed to be Gordon Solie and Ted DiBiase.
Totally different.
But as an unfortunate turn of events, Gordon Solie was pretty soon before this event diagnosed with throat cancer. Which unfortunately led to his passing about less than a year later. So that was obviously unfortunate. And Ted DiBiase probably came to his senses and decided not to do it. Apparently, there were some other names. They reached out to a lot of people for this. They reached out to, like, Vader and...
For commentary?
Not for commentary, just to be part of the show.
Okay. I was going to say, holy shit.
And one of the first names they actually reached out to about being part of the show was Sid Vicious. Or Sid. But Sid was signed by WCW before this show took place. So... So he couldn't be, he was contractually obligated to appear for WCW. So, yeah, there's quite a few instances of certain people either signing contracts with other promotions in the meantime or just, you know, getting cold feet about the whole idea. And in all fairness, their senses were right.
Yeah, I mean, you add a guy like a Vader or a Sid to this card and it's going to definitely bump up the quality. So I don't blame them for going after them, but I think that they made the right decision not being a part of this.
Also, have you noticed the production immediately, like the lighting is terrible, the pyro is awful of what amounts to pyro,
right?
Is there just a few sparklers and like going off, but it's so dark. It's not dark enough that I can't watch it, which is the worst thing about it. But it is really, really just dark, and the lighting is so bad.
It's as dull as it could be to make you feel like they didn't even bother to put any lights on there. So I don't know anything about lighting. I acted in the plays in school. I didn't do the lighting stuff, so I don't know how that works and everything. And you know, I'm sure that it's more complicated than just setting up some lights, but it seems like they just got somebody to set up some lights. And,
yeah,
you know, like they got somebody like me who would be like, I don't know, put like a couple fucking floodlights down and you're good.
Well, fundamentally, like Billy Stone didn't know anything about professional wrestling when he got into this. That's why he brought in a separate booker. I think his name was, it was something Lombardi. It wasn't Brooklyn Brawler. it wasn't the Brooklyn Brawler, but it was I think a guy called Michael Lombardi or something like that, who had some wrestling experience. I don't know if he's any relation, but yeah. And so for Rosenbloom, he essentially got this gig pretty soon beforehand and was essentially tried to be taught everything about professional wrestling that you need to know, well, mainly names and moves and some background stuff by, I think, Tully Blanchard and some other person that was available at the time over the course of like 2 days, like giving a 2-day crash course. And none of it sunk in, clearly.
No.
because you can tell how visibly, well, as in visibly, but audibly. It's a commentary. Angry Dutch Mantel is getting
yeah.
as the show progresses with this guy that he has like, he knows, has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah, I have a note about that. Like, I think it's like the 3/4 mark or so.
Yeah.
But it's also so bland and generic, too. And that's something that carries over with the matches, the promos, the commentary, where it's, I guess, like, a good analogy for it is, if you watch something that's making a parody of professional wrestling, this is what they would do to try to make it seem authentic. Like, if you were to write, okay, in this sitcom, they go to see a professional wrestling match, they would have lines like, these fans are rocking and rolling, it's going to be an historic event here. Throughout the whole thing, that's what they do. Everything is cliche. Everything is these generic tropes that are well past outdated. And we're also talking about, you want to try to cash in on the height of this professional wrestling boom that's happening. This is the Attitude Era. This is when they're like, we don't want to be the golden age, say your prayers and eat your vitamins thing, where the guy that has the, he gives the finger to everybody, and he, you know, Stone Cold is like the guy that's making the rounds. You would think that they would try to capitalize on that, but instead they go in the direction of the opposite way of, let's act like everything is 1982 again or something.
Well, yeah, they clearly go for, again, the nostalgic aspect. So trying to appeal to the, I mean, it's hard to think of a lapsed wrestling fan at the time at the biggest peak in wrestling viewership. But I presume there are people that stopped watching around about the Attitude Era who said, like, oh, wrestling's not the same as it was back in my day. It's all soap opera and car crash TV and titties on screen and stuff like that. And just, where's the good old-fashioned wholesome wrestling that I knew back in the 80s and early 90s, and they're trying to appeal to that one.
The ones that are like, I don't like this Degeneration X, give me the Von Erichs.
Yeah, they're appealing to those lapsed fans, and they're also appealing to children. Or at least, well, that's the case as well. But there are a lot of instances that which don't seem to follow that logic, but we'll get to...
One in particular.
Yeah.
Christ. So they start this off with... everybody who's anybody is here, which is exactly the type of hyperbole that you hear with any of these things. You know, you watch an Impact Wrestling show and it's like, we've got the best roster. You can't touch our roster. And it's like, you got 6 people that are signed on like a 2-month deal, and then they end up leaving and going somewhere else. And you know it, and we know it, but you're not going to say that that's the case. Of course, a little bit later on, eventually some people just start saying that that's the case, but whatever. And they equate the King Kong Bundy and Yokozuna backstage segment, which is breaking news, by the way. They do it throughout, like, this whole thing is breaking news. We're going to immediately set up the thing that we're doing. They equate it to a hurricane that had just happened. Tasteful, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're really great about it.
Good timing with the hurricane that's going on right now. Hopefully everybody's okay with this
We're also preempting the fact that this show takes place at Casino Magic in what's the city called? I'm trying to recall the city.
Like Mississippi or something, I think.
Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. Which was destroyed in a hurricane a few years later on. So it had to be rebuilt afterwards. So yeah, really good preempting of that.
And then they run down this card, and again, it doesn't seem all that bad, all things considered. Like, if this was a show that was a local show, especially when I was a kid, I would definitely have been like, hey, let me just see if I can go to that, you know? Like, get to see some people that I really enjoyed, and booking-wise, if this was a mock draft, I'm sure I probably would have come across a lot of the same ideas of, I'll put this person with that person, whatever, and... Yeah, I think it's funny that almost every match is labeled a grudge match, which is okay, sure, whatever. But we start off the actual, let's get into the ring, let's get the action going with this announcer, who says, and I quote, "So throw down your toys and get out of the sandbox, playtime's over, because tonight, somebody's going to get their ass whipped tonight in here."
Yeah. So he was the announcer is a guy, well, the ring announcer is a guy called Crispus Stanford, who was the entertainment manager for the Casino Magic. So they just brought him in to be the ring announcer.
Because anybody could just be a ring announcer.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, yeah, I've watched Michael Buffer. I can do that.
Well, at least the backstage interviewer guy they have, again, he's not exactly great by any stretch of the imagination, but at least Michael St. John was already part of Memphis Wrestling at the time. So at least he had some wrestling background as being a backstage announcer.
So, doesn't help him when they cut to the feed and the audio doesn't work.
And it doesn't help it when a guy walks up to him on some concoction of cocaine, meth, alcohol, whatever Roberts was on, but we'll get to that as well. It's like, I don't think any amount of wrestling experience can prepare you for that happening.
And our first match is the opening tag team match between the Samoan SWAT team of Samu and the Samoan Savage. They call him Fatu. He's Sam Fatu, but he's not Fatu from the Head Shrinkers and Rikishi.
He's his twin brother.
Yeah, so they act like, okay, well, whatever. And they've got, I think they got Sika ringside. Mm. And a guy named Paul Adams, who this is the note that I wrote down. I asked myself, who the fuck is this guy talking? Paul Adams? What? He's just rambling.
You know that you really achieve something special when you don't have an entry in cagematch.net. He's not the only guy on this show that doesn't have a profile there. But yeah, he's just generic heel manager cutting the same generic heel promo. We don't like you guys being here. It's like, these are the real dominant guys. We're going to the top of the mountain. Or again, cliche upon cliche upon cliche.
Nobody has the balls to fight the Samoan SWAT team. And it seems like it goes on for like 10 fucking minutes and that he says nothing. So rambling motherfucker.
10 minutes and nothing happening? God, I've got the match.
You're right. It actually is 10 minutes. And we get some highlights, like, on the commentary. It's called an arm drag. Get it? Arm drag.
We should at least mention who the Samoan SWAT team are going up against.
That's right, yeah. They're going up against Marty Jannetty and Tommy Rogers, who, if you don't know, are not a tag team. And then we've mentioned that multiple times on here. Well, they're not a tag team. They were never a tag team together, but they have had other matches. So there you go.
they're two guys that are the Jannettys of their tag team. Mm-hmm. So, and one of them is the Jannetty of the
literal Jannetty.
So I have to say this, and I won't say this very often about the guy that wants to fuck his daughter, but he deserves better than this show. Like, he was actually one of the, like, again, this match is terrible. Every match on this show is terrible. But out of the people in it, he seems like a guy that probably could have had a decent match with someone.
At least at this time, maybe, yeah.
I mean, I saw Jannetty, like, Jannetty wrestling in, like, 2005, 2006, and he was fine.
There's one other person. There's three other people that I would give credit to try.
I'm going to try and give some praise every now and again for certain things. But yeah, this match is just a load of clapping to the crowd. The Samoan SWAT team send 5 minutes of the match outside of the ring, just staring at the people inside of it. Unless you're paying super attention to the commentary, which I am, because the flying leg kicks and the side slam takedown.
Reverse slam takedown, I think is what he said.
Like, where does he even come up with that shit? It's like I know that you were probably just given a crash course in wrestling, but why did you think that sort of turn of phrase was the right thing? But yeah, it's just a load of stalling, a load of playing to the crowd, and it's got no semblance of psychology to it.
No rhythm, no entertainment value, put it that way.
Yeah, that's what Rogers gets the hot tag off Jannetty's been selling the entire match, and he goes for a little while, and then Marty flies out the ring onto the fake Fatu. And then the other guy just gets hit with a TKO and loses. Okay.
So I currently have with me my wife's friend is visiting from Brazil. And I was watching this at the time when she was hanging around. And she's like, oh, like, you know, are you working on something? I was like, yeah, I'm just, you know, watching this old show. It's supposed to be really bad. And she's like, oh, I thought that this was something that was happening like now. And I'm like, no, no, God. Like, Debbie, I would never be able to do my job if this is what was happening now. I hate some of the stuff that we get, but good Lord, no. And I was like, no, I'm watching a match between a guy that's not really the guy that they're trying to pretend is the guy and another guy that is teaming with the other guy. That's whatever. I don't know who this guy is. Then there's this guy who's a legend. There's that guy. I don't know who he is. And then there's this guy who posted about potentially having sex with his daughter and trying to kill somebody with a brick and whatever. And she's like, what are you watching? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, this is a thing. Yeah, it's just kind of... Let me get some commentary notes. Like I've got on here, Samu's the size of a whale. Then what are King Kong Bundy and Yokozuna or One Man Gang? I got the quote here. I think this concept is great. Just because you don't see these guys on WWF or WCW doesn't mean they don't have a place in wrestling. Said about three or four times.
Yeah.
Just yeah, really trying to be like, look, if they're not the guys you're watching, but fucking give us a break immediately under this.
Yeah, these are the ones that aren't quote-unquote good enough to be on the actual shows that everyone is watching. They can't even make a fucking ECW show, but they're here yeah. and they deserve your attention.
Right. The obscene, as they call it, chair shot that is almost immediately acted as if it didn't matter at all. Yeah.
You can tell it's the attitude error because like they're just doing a chair shot because they think that that's somewhat edgy.
Right.
But it plays nothing into the story and it's whatever story they're trying to tell in this match. And it just like, it also adds to the other matches like, okay, you've had the chair shot in this match. Now every other match that's going to have a chair shot involved in it is slightly lessened by it because you've just thrown a random one into this match for no reason.
But as they say, the Samoan SWAT team can put down on their resume that they beat Tommy Rogers and Marty Jannetty on the first ever Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view. You can put that on your fucking resume. Be proud of that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Go to another...
I'm sure Jannetty's actually prouder of killing that guy.
Maybe. He kept killing him and getting away with it.
Rather admit to that than being on this show.
We go to another backstage. They keep going perpetually, you know, match, backstage. And this one is setting up this idea that Sensational Sherry, although they can't call her Sensational Sherry, they call her Sensuous, I think, Sherry Martel, is with George of the Animal Steel because you get higher up in the business from your body count and he's certifiably insane. What?
I know. It seems really odd as well. It's a bit seedy as well because essentially George is taking off her dress as they're making their way to the hotel room.
Yeah.
Which is a bit like, I like the, I watched the video of like those people reviewing this show and I like the way that one of them turned it. It's like, it's less of a romantic relationship and it's more like a daughter leading her father in order to get his will signed.
That's fitting. That's the thing.
Yeah, because he looks so old and lost. And we only, like, I know he's gone now, but, like, it wasn't very long ago that we lost George the Animal Steel, but he looks, like, ancient in this.
He passed in February 2017. Yeah, at 79.
For context, Sherry Martel died 10 years prior to that.
Oof.
So yeah, that's another part of it.
But it's weird too, because it's like there's two different versions of him here. It seems like he can talk and he's just a regular person at the first part of it, and then he becomes like a raving lunatic in the second part of it.
Well, on the whole contrast, Greg Valentine looks exactly the same as Greg Valentine ever looked.
Yeah, that guy never aged.
That's just what he looks like.
Greg Valentine, it seems like when he was, I don't know, a teenager, he became like 47. And then he just stayed
the rest of his life.
Right. He looks exactly the same as he does in like the 92 Rumble or like 88 or whatever. And he cuts a generic promo. The promos are so bland on this event. It's basically, I'm going to beat you because tonight I'm going to beat you. And I wrote down here, it was at this point I started watching at 1.5 times speed.
That's fair enough.
Because I was like, I got to get through some of this. I eventually ended up switching back over because it became a little too hard to listen to the commentary. And I was like, I have to listen to the commentary on this at least.
So the interesting part, one interesting part of his promo is the thing that he talks about, that he's going to take Sherry back with him.
Yeah.
Take Sherry for it. And then essentially he doesn't have to try very hard because from the outset of the match, Sherry is attacking George the Animal Steel.
She's immediately turned on him.
And we have no idea why. There is no context to this whatsoever. Apart from the fact that, like, well, this, I guess the thing they're trying to tell is that George has his shirt over his head, and so he doesn't know that Sherry is attacking him. So that's kind of like, so clearly she already came into the match with the intention of screwing him over, but doesn't want him to know that in case he wins so she can go back to him otherwise. That's like me making a story up in my head to try and account for this shit, but it just makes no context and it gets zero reaction. It's like the crowd had no idea, were stunned. Well, I don't know if they were just stunned about it or they just didn't care. It's probably a mixture of both.
It could be that they assumed that she was with Greg the Hammer Valentine just because it's like, that's the heel and that's Sherry. Or they were just like, well, what's happening? Because I can't see anything because it's so fucking dark. But she turns on him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it makes sense that Sherry is with Valentine more than George Animal Steel, so I'll give a tiny bit of credit when it comes to that. And Dutch Mantel, this is a whole entire match. He is basically being like, women are snakes, man. I'm telling you, bitches be crazy. He's like hyper-focused on fuck Sherry, man.
And don't get me started on the Mexicans.
It's not even anywhere close to the worst segment, too. That's the thing. Like, yeah, this is arguably one of the better segments of the night because
I don't go that far, but it's like,
when you're comparing one thing to another, it's kind of like, all right, I kind of understand where they're going a little bit here. And at least Greg Valentine gets to win like he should. And then they do the typical thing with George Animal Steel ruins the turnbuckle because that's his shtick. So.
Yeah, but it's just, the whole thing is like, talk about recently with like referees being treated as morons in some AEW segments and stuff like that, but this referee in particular just doesn't have I don't know what the foreign object was, but Greg Valentine has like a spoon hanging out of his trunks and stuff like that. It's like he doesn't notice it, and then he doesn't hear or seemingly notice Sherry Martel hitting George right in the back of the head with a steel chair. And yeah, so that's how he loses. After Sherry hits him in the head with a chair, Valentine just immediately pins him. And yeah, then George just immediately makes a comeback. He gets hit in the steel chair with Valentine, a guy who's probably 100 pounds heavier than, if not more, than Sherry. And it doesn't affect him at all, because apparently now he's in animal mode.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it's just really, really...
Shit.
Yeah, really shit, really sad and depressing, and yeah, let's move on.
After that, we've got a match between Too Cold Scorpio and, as I wrote him down, who? Leo? So, Julio Fantastico? Who the fuck is this guy?
All right, so Julio Fantastico at this time was pretty much a nobody. He was a guy that was mainly working in just a load of like really low-level indies. But the premise of this match, at least in the mind of Billy Stone and the promoter, was that there were too many nostalgia-based, classic, old-school matches on this card. So they needed a more dynamic, modern-day for 1999 match to try and add a bit of variety and panache to this show. And so I think originally it wasn't supposed to be Julio Fantastico. It was supposed to be a guy, can't remember the name of him. But it was supposed to be a guy that ended up joining a WWF developmental territory in the months leading up to this, so he was no longer available. So they brought in this guy, who does end up, realistically, he's one of the guys that actually benefits the most from this show, because he actually goes from this and, in a short period of time, signs for ECW and becomes Julio De Niro. And so he's basically a guy... not a big guy, but like a middling guy in the dying days of ECW, and that's probably what he's best known for.
It looks like he was a part of TNA for a little bit.
Yeah, for a little while, yeah.
He was a disciple of Raven?
Well, everyone is at some point or another.
Former tag team partner of CM Punk?
Yeah, because CM Punk was one of a member of Raven's, whatever they called it. It wasn't Flock, but something like that in TNA.
So he's just like, he's a guy that I don't think I've ever seen in any other another fashion. But he's, relatively speaking, I mean, compared to the people that you see on this card, he's not that bad. Like, I can understand why they would be like, let's get this kid and put him in there and maybe he could do some moves and stuff. But, of course, the match isn't great by any means.
No. I mean, it's, again, you can see, I don't say glimpses, but you can see, like, the semblance of glimpses of the kind of more fast-paced, acrobatic style that you kind of can see, well, you see definitely in much better versions nowadays. But it's so slow and botchy, and so even the cool, I'd say cool stuff they're doing, like the little flips and spin kicks and stuff like that, skinning the cat, a few dives to the outside, they're all just really poorly executed.
Mm-hmm.
But the best part of this entire match is when Scorpio throws Julio out to the crowd and the kid gets decked by Julio as he lands. So that's always funny, seeing kids get hurt.
And Scorpio comes out a little bit like a Flash Funk.
With a big gold belt.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the belt. What's the belt?
Well, it's the big gold belt, but it's clearly one that they bought from like a shop or whatever and stuff like that. And they're just using it as like, hey, he's the champ of something.
Like there are no champions here. And he's just like, I'm just going to come out with a belt because I guess I'm going to say that I'm a champion, essentially.
It's like a toy version of it. It's like it's clearly not leather. It's like, yeah, it's just, and like, why couldn't they just find a belt that someone wasn't using at the time? Why'd it have to be like, oh, this is clearly the WCW championship that you're holding right now. But yeah. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. I say a lot of stuff going on. It's going really slowly. Like, people are saying that this is apparently Lucha Libre style, but like it's as far removed from that as you could possibly get while still retaining some semblance of it.
It's dollar store Lucha Libre style. It's like, yeah, when you see those little toys that like a knockoff bin thing, and instead of it being like Ninja Turtles, it's called like Amphibian Bros or something.
And so there's one thing where like the referee gets kicked into the ropes, and Scorpio has to pretend that he gets crotched on the top rope, but he just lands on his butt, just sits down, and then he hits like Fantastico hits a dive. Well, I say diving. Hits like I don't want to call it an RKO because it's shit, but it's like an ace crusher or a diamond cutter off of the middle rope. Gets zero reaction. And then Scorpio just goes into the finishing sequence, hits a float over leg drop, like a flipping leg drop onto Fantastico, and then goes for the tumbleweed. How much do you think he connected with that tumbleweed? I'm gonna estimate a solid 0%.
Maybe 0.01.
Maybe he just touches one of his hair strands as he goes down.
Right.
But he sells it like he lands on his face, even though he touched it whatsoever. And, you know, these sort of things happen. Sometimes moves connect or don't connect, and so they try and like shy away from it. You know what people don't do when they're actually professionals in this role? Show a slow motion replay from a completely different angle, which demonstrates how badly he missed the missed the move. Oh god, this is such terrible camera work, such terrible production.
And we've got a new addition to the commentary team during this point, which Captain Lou Albano. Oh. He comes out for the commentary, and this is where I wrote down a note that I kept coming back to, which is, holy shit, can anyone from this era cut a promo without calling someone baby? Every fucking person on this, let me tell you something, baby, that's whatever. It's like, okay, you all want to be Ric Flair. You all have the baby thing. You're all like, you know, the Jimmy Hart kind of aspect of that. You all want to do the figure four, you know, whatever. And the commentary is so, the one note here, I think there's like about 8 U's, and fuck, the commentary is so bland because there's a line, it's going to take more than that for a guy to beat a guy. Dutch Mantel says, I think it was Dutch Mantel says, hey, this match is getting to be pretty good. Like, way to act fake excited.
I can't keep up with all these dives and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, but these guys are somewhat competent at what they're doing.
And by the end of this, on the commentary side of things, a random piece of paper is introduced that says, oh, yeah, hey, Captain Lou Albano, you're the commissioner. The commissioner of Eras of Wrestling. And Albano,
they made me the commissioner? Hot diggity damn.
Albano immediately starts saying, I've been in this business for 48 years and I've never seen a production like this. It's so good. It's like, you gave me a promotion? I fucking love this place. And he says maybe 3 other times on this event about how he's been in the business for 48 years. He really wants you to know that. But this fucking commissioner thing becomes like the B plot of Heroes of Wrestling.
As I said earlier, that it was supposed to be an on-running series of shows, but this was the one and only thing, so it doesn't actually matter in general. But for one glorious night, Captain Lou Albano was the commissioner of a wrestling promotion, and he was going to enjoy it.
And he, like, doesn't do anything, so it's pointless. We get a backstage, Too Cold Scorpio wins, by the way, for anybody, just double-checking about that. We get a backstage thing where King Kong Bundy, because you have to keep going back to this to try to set up the main event that doesn't end up happening, of King Kong Bundy calling Yokozuna Porkozuna.
Mm. Oh, but he's not Yokozuna, Tony.
Formerly Yokozuna.
Yeah, because they had to get around those pesky little trademark laws by saying the former Yokozuna, or as we'll talk about. Well, I don't even know if I want to preempt what this.
The next one, yeah.
Okay, can I preempt this by saying, before we talk about what the match is, just this quote from Brian Alvarez, who did obviously a review of this show. This match is minus more stars than there are stars in the universe, and the universe is infinite.
This match, for context as well, it goes on for nearly 9 minutes, and it
feels like 90.
Yeah, it is Nikolai Volkov, okay, and Iron Sheik, okay, with Nikita Breznikov.
Ah, there's the second guy that doesn't have the cage match profile.
No fucking clue who that's supposed to be. Just
fake Russian manager.
Against Bushwhacker Butch and Bushwhacker Luke, otherwise known as Luke and Dutch, as the one guy fucking calls them, or the Men from Down Under, because they can't call them the Bushwhackers.
I mean, couldn't you have at least called them the Sheep Herders? That was their name when they were in WCW and NWA. It's like, what, like, you have to call them the Men from Down Under.
Yeah. And, of course, this is a match that primarily starts off with Iron Sheik doing his bit, which, you know, I mean, Iron Sheik's bit is fun. I always love to hear, don't chant USA, USA. And he fucking cuts a promo about Hulk Hogan and Bob Backlund, who aren't there, just saying, fuck this too, by the way.
That's his MO.
Yeah. And like, he does the arm thing, what the fucking called?
What, Iranian club demonstration.
Yeah, he does that. Like, you know, he's hitting the marks that he needs to hit for that. They don't do the anthem in the same way, you know, of course. But not that it would fucking matter to this crowd, because this crowd throughout this whole match chants USA from the Men from Down Under.
In a match involving a Russian, an Iranian, and 2 men from New Zealand.
Fucking hell.
You're going to chant USA. It's the same. I mean, to be fair, these fans don't deserve any better if they're going to do that. Really, you get what you paid for if you're going to be willing to chant that.
It's not the worst thing that they chant on this event.
No, well, fucking hell. We'll get to that. But yeah, this match goes 9 minutes. I counted one move. I counted one move, which was Volkov lifted up, I think it was, I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Luke for what's like a backbreaker, essentially, which he basically just rests him across his knee and falls to the mat, which Rosenbloom then refers to as soft slam.
I didn't get that.
Soft slam.
Soft slam.
Don't call it that. Give it some name, like, oh, the tree trunk fall over move or something. Call it a soft slam, because, and literally the rest of it is just like slow knees and boots into the chest, or just clubbing bows to the back, or just a load of preening to the crowd. It's just, oh my,
it's abysmal.
It's a disaster. And it's so poorly like, even though these guys are all clearly limited in what they can do, it's 1999 and these guys passed their peaks in the early 90s. Like, these guys do what they can, and even that is nowhere near enough, to the point where it does get into like the hot tag, like the worst hot tag in human existence. And it's like they try, he does like the double noggin knocker, and like then their heads go nowhere near each other and they just move backwards slightly. They can barely fall over because they know if they fall over, probably in Cheek's case, if he falls over, he's not getting back up.
Right.
And so they eventually, like, what happens is that Volkov accidentally hits Cheek with a foreign object, which is him basically just touching the guy, him falling down and Butch getting a pin.
Yeah, so like, out of all the things, it's like the fucking Bushwhackers beat, yeah, Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah, this is the, I think, only the second match in Wrestling Observer history that Dave Meltzer gave a -5 stars to.
What's the other one?
I think, I'll have to find it. Give me a little while to find it. I could find it on top rated matches, but yeah, just keep talking about how bad this is for, and I'll
it's really, I mean, you really should watch this match, because I mean, you should watch this whole event if you're down for watching something that's awful, because even at the end of this, they set up this idea that Volkov and Sheik are mad at each other because they lost the match, and they, you know, accidentally hitting him and everything, and they immediately just hug afterward, just forget it, we argue, we're friends, man.
All right, so I found it. It wasn't actually, I miscared. So there are actually, there are 5 matches that received the -5 star distinction from Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer. The first is Junkyard Dog versus Moondog Spot from the Wrestling Classic, which is like this WWF. It's classed as the first WWF pay-per-view before WrestleMania. Then there's, speaking of WrestleMania, WrestleMania 2, Mr. T versus Roddy Piper in the boxing match.
Really? -5 stars?
Well, yeah, because it wasn't a boxing match and it ended in so much, like, it basically turned into a shoot incident between the two of them. Next, Halloween Havoc 98, Hollywood Hogan versus The Warrior, which is a match worthy of a -5 star, I believe. Then there's this one, and then the most recent is a Triple Mania match between the Three Villanos against Murder Clown, Monster Clown, and Psycho Clown. And I have actually watched that match as well, and it is as bad as advertised.
Mm.
So I don't think it's as bad as this match. This match is like the king of -5 star matches, but it is still, yeah, but all those matches are terrible.
It's disgustingly bad.
Yeah, but this is like, on Cage Match, this has a rating of 0.38 out of 10. This is ranked as well. So it's like, yeah, it's
some nice soul out there gave it a 0.5 or something to boost its rating.
Yeah, it's just so bad. These guys are immobile, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Awful.
I hate that old style of wrestling to begin with.
Mm.
To me, I can't... I mean, I'm going to catch some heat for this. Like, I can't watch before, say, like, WrestleMania 4 and not feel bored out of my mind. Yeah. Even when it comes to the Savage and Steamboat match that everybody goes completely nuts over, I'm like, eh... By today's standards, it's overrated. I can't really watch it and not get a little bit bored. But that's, of course, at that time frame, that was still kind of like revolutionary. The worst of that era of just these big burly dudes just barely moving or whatever is still infinitely better than these big out of shape dudes that are, like you said, with like Sheik, like you can't take a bump because you're not going to be able to get up. So you just basically stand around and you're essentially you're going out to the ring for the visual of you existing.
Yeah, basically they put Sheik and Volkov out there and just like pretend that it's 1983 or something. Pretend it's 1984. Pretend it's back in the time when Sheik was like a main eventer in the WWF.
Right.
And that's all we need. And the rest of it is just, it's essentially, it's four old men stumbling around a ring. I'm surprised that, like, I was kind of hoping that you had still continued watching this in 1.5 because you probably still felt it was going slow at this point. And just thinking, hey, we actually turned this speed up or something like that. It's like, no, it is all just that slow and that bad.
Yeah, it's, and it's still, like, there's still so many more things that suck on this, too. We had a backstage thing, the super lame attack from Tully Blanchard getting attacked by Stan Lane. And
okay, I have to give a degree of credit to this. Not the attack, because the attack was lame. But the promo that Tully cut afterwards, it's the best promo.
It's the best promo by far,
again,
yeah.
Again, and it's like, on most shows or most wrestling shows, it would just be like a good, but like just standard good promo. In this one, it feels like it's a, he's like descended from the gods because of how good it is. But it's just, yeah, they at least try to build up some semblance of heat and rivalry for this match. And the idea is that like both these guys have been out of wrestling for a long time. Stan Lane's doing his like his sports announcing stuff, so he even like takes the role of the announcer and does a much better job.
Infinitely better job.
Yeah, and Tully Blanchard at this point obviously came back in wrestling very recently and is now gone again. But at this point, he had been out wrestling for a while and he was just a preacher. And so this was like his just a one-off match that he agreed to do. And yeah, so he's clearly still got a lot of fire. They pushed the idea of that whole member of the Four Horsemen versus a member of the Midnight Express. So there's that element of nostalgia to it. And then the match happens and, don't get me wrong, the stuff they do looks okay. It's like competent, and that's the best. And that's in this landscape, competent is like 5 stars. It's like you can just. But it's they don't do a lot, and it all is all pretty boring. At least boring is bad. Is better than outright terrible.
Before even the match starts and they do this backstage thing, I have this note written down. Oh my God, I've never seen something like this before. Wowzers, can we get someone to break this up? And throughout this match, they are trying to tell the story that Stan Lane is like this God's gift to women. And they keep, every time they cut to a shot of a woman in the crowd, they keep trying to push this thing. Oh, these women are fixated on sweet Stan Lane. They're not so even bored. Looking at their guys that they're with or whatever. And the women look so fucking bored.
Yeah. What's the idea? They look so fucking bored. Imagine this was back in a time where there weren't mobile phones and cell phones.
Yeah.
These guys, or at least like you couldn't get on your fucking a smartphone or whatever and look and just play Snake or whatever and stuff like that. Just, they had to fucking stand there and just watch this shit and like they completely nonplussed. I mean, apparently there's 2,300 people in this arena, which I find hard to believe.
Yeah, sure there is.
And probably about 20 of them paid any money to be here, but you know, the rest of them are just there for the whatever favors or something like that, or the atmosphere, or it was cold out and they decided to just walk in. but yeah, they just had
everybody looks like they're just a split second away from yawning.
Yeah.
And then they're trying to pace that off as like, oh, you know, these women are just like enamored, like they're, you know, they're gonna be going nuts like over sweet Stan Lane, which okay, sure, fine, whatever. I mean, they tell that story throughout this whole thing. There's this the ending to this match.
Oh, God.
It's like Tully basically doesn't get up in time for the referee from the angle, but then it turns out that it's actually been a double pinfall, and the referee counts 3. Stan Lane thinks that he won, but the referee declares Tully the winner, and they have to go to a different camera angle to show that Stan Lane's shoulders were down at the same time, and Tully barely kicked out at three, which means that he technically broke up his pinfall, but was still kind of pinning Stan Lane, despite the fact that the commentary team originally passes it off that Stan Lane did an illegal move. So it's like, it's not a DQ, it's a pinfall that you can't see. It's executed poorly, but the commentary team doesn't know about.
Yeah, I kind of want to see if I can do a good encapsulation of what the commentary team said at the end of it. So it goes 1, 2, 3. Wait a minute. Is that it? Did that happen? Did Stan win it? Did Stan win? Stan's holding his hands up. Stan wins. What's happening? What's going on? Wait a minute. Stan win this one? Wait a minute. And that's just basically, that's my encapsulation of what commentary is saying at the end of this. They clearly have no idea what the finish was supposed to be for this match, and they do such a poor job of putting the finish together anyway that I kind of don't blame them. This is the one moment where I feel like bad for Randy Rosenbloom not knowing what's going on, because Dutch does have no idea what's going on either. And I don't know why they decided to do some convoluted finish where it's like a double down and like Blanchard just gets his shoulder up at the last second, and so it's just that pinfall afterwards. Like, I guess with the concept being that they were going to do multiple shows, that they would run this back and make it a more of a grudge match for the second show.
Probably, because Stan Lane is like all pissed off afterward.
Yeah,
and
beats him up afterwards. Yeah. But it's just, it was a bunch of really boring, nothing happening, competent wrestling. And then it's just a back suplex.
Yeah.
A back suplex. Like, it's the worst kind of back suplex, because like Blanchard gets like, I don't know, 3 inches in the air. And it's just like, and pretty much the entire match, like Stan Lane dominates pretty much the vast majority of this entire match. And there's just like he's the one that hits him with the back suplex, and then he doesn't get his fucking shoulders up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know who thought this finish was a good idea. Like, just, it's like, even if it is going to be a show afterwards, just have Stan Lane attack him afterwards and just have Blanchard win. Why am I even criticizing it? Shit.
Yeah.
Criticizing the finish is like the weakest part of this entire thing. It's like, don't put it together in the first place. Don't do this show.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is the highest rated match on Cage Match for the entire show. Like, it gets a solid 4.5 out of 10 on the
still being generous.
Yeah, I know. Well, to be fair, I guess if you're grading it against every other match on the show, there's probably only one other match on the show which is vaguely comparable, which is the Too Cold Scorpio and Fantastico match.
True.
So yeah, I mean, this match is pretty short as well. I mean, to be fair, some would say that's a godsend, but it's also just about that, like, they were only starting doing some halfway decent stuff to the point where they just hit this back suplex and ended it. Like, yeah, it's who knows if they could have put something somewhat decent together if they were given more time, but yeah, this is just absolutely awful.
And again, like, I'm not the type of person who thinks you got to do a certain series of flips for it to be a good match. And I actually argue the opposite. A lot of times I'm like, I'm bored with this AEW match because it's just a series of moves and there's nothing to it. But when you are, I guess, my grandpappy used to like when Bruno Sammartino would get somebody in a claw and just grip them for 20 minutes. And then, you hit a body slam. Fucking wow. Like, yeah, it's not going to translate the same, especially in 1999.
I mean, I can appreciate to agree some old school stuff, but these guys, again, they're too old. And then to be fair, Blanchard actually wrestling with FTR a couple of years ago was better at this point than this. But it doesn't work, and there's no heat for it. And yeah, it's just like absolutely, definitely how, I don't know, how nothing this match is.
We go to another backstage segment here where Jim Neidhart is suddenly with King Kong Bundy to bitch about Jake Roberts' snake. and not Todd Pentengel, I don't know his name, the backstage interviewer.
Michael St. John.
Accidentally calls him Jim the Neidhart Anvil. The Neidhart Anvil.
it's an easy mistake to make.
Still, it's just one of those, like, fuck. Go on, you can't even get the guy's name right with this.
No. Well, it's a night where anything that could go wrong is going wrong, so let's just roll with it.
Yeah. I mean, I would rather watch Jim the Neidhart Anvil than most of the other things here, including this next match, which was...
Oh, my God.
Abdullah the Butcher with Honest John Cheatham?
Yep.
Who's that guy?
Let's see if he actually has something on cage match. He actually has a cage match listing. Huh. Honest John, freelancer, California, USA male. Alter egos, Honest John. So your name is Honest John, but your alter ego is also Honest John. That's great as well. Nicknames, the living swipe right of professional wrestling. Has he got any matches? All right, he's wrestled most as recently as the 22nd of September 2022.
No fucking way.
Yep.
You sure this is the right guy?
Well, it's the name Honest John, so I can only go based on that, and it's the one that's linking to at a cage match.
No, it's not him, because there's another thing that comes up. Honest John Cheatham passed away in 2019.
Oh, yeah, I was just looking. Oh, this guy's first match was in 2018. Oh, well, some guy in cage match has not been linking this up correctly. But, I didn't know because he didn't say his age on cage match. But so that guy, RIP Cheatham.
I guess he was Abdullah the Butcher's manager for different indie shows. Maybe. NWA Wildside or something, according to this website. But this... never heard of him before. Billy Robertson was his name. But he's out there with Abdullah the Butcher, and he's going up against One Man Gang, who, of course, has a problem with Abdullah the Butcher for some reason, and this is going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a bloodbath. There's going to be bloodshed. Blood, 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 blood. I wrote down dog shit. just two lumbering guys slowly grabbing the other one's head, basically. Weaker punches than if Shane McMahon were half asleep.
You say guys. These... I don't want to be too offensive, but these are two blobs, essentially. Essentially just attacking each other with chains and forks. And apparently they weren't allowed to bleed on this show. They've been told by the promoters that if they do, or if, well, a little bit of blood would be okay, but they just are essentially pouring buckets out of there. To the point where Abdullah's actually licking up his own blood at certain points in this match as well, because he is a sick human being and probably someone who is in the Hall of Fame that probably doesn't merit being in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Coco Beware school of people that shouldn't be in the WWE Hall of Fame. But yeah, it's just a load of cuts and... They're doing nothing. They're just lumbering around the ring. I think there's one move in this match and the camera misses it.
And it's, for a thing that's not supposed to have all that blood, they advertise it as being, this is going to be a bloodbath and everything. And then that's the entire gimmick of it, is just look at them bleeding. Mm. Look at the piece of paper afterward that has, been covered in blood. And it ends in a double count out, because that's how you get the fans to want to watch another event. You have... Mm. People that can't move do stupid matches that are boring and have no finish on some of them.
Yeah, it's just, again, it's two lumbering masses just absolutely just like doing virtually nothing and yet still managing to bleed buckets. At least John Moxley works for his stuff. He bleeds too much, but at least he works for it. And then I think that, they just do a double count out. And my presumption is, again, knowing what I know about certain matches of this event, especially one that we'll come up to soon, there's probably agreed that neither of them would job in this match.
They probably ahead of time signed a contract that said, I'm not losing.
Oh, we'll get to that when we get to get towards the main event. But, yeah. This is, again, just shit upon shit. And this was just, the worst kind of, like, hardcore garbage wrestling.
Yeah, in a way that it's not impressive, like in this stunt sense of being like, oh wow, I can't believe that you did that to yourself. It's just sort of, what the fuck you do that for?
Yeah, there's not even any, like, again, like that car crash value to it of, like, even though you don't want anyone to get seriously hurt, like, you at this point, it's not like I felt bad for the well-being or felt like either of these two guys were in any serious jeopardy. They just bleed a lot. Mm-hmm. And these two bleed a lot anyway, so it's like, so yeah, and they were just walking around the ring as slowly as possible, trying to put some semblance of a match together. So, yeah. I'd say it's probably up there in terms of like one of the worst ever hardcore matches ever to take place.
It's really just,
it's hard to think of one that's worse.
For a thing that's like, again, I'm not the biggest absolute fan of that kind of style. Like, I can't really condone the whole, you just attack each other with light tubes over and over again. Cause to me, it's like, you're fucking, you're not even a wrestler, you know, you're just basically, you know, a guy who gets beat up for a living. But if you're going to try to do that style match, that's what people want to see. Mm. Yeah. So if you don't do that, then you're just giving them this low rent, boring version of something that they're not going to enjoy. And then the people that don't like that kind of bloody match, they're not going to enjoy that either. And then nobody wins, because I don't think anybody would have enjoyed this. And I wouldn't have, like, again, you know, maybe if I had this group, that maybe I would have put Abdul the Butcher against One Man Gang and been like, yeah, maybe they'll have like a good hardcore match or something. But didn't fucking happen, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's just terrible. And also, I imagine that doesn't Abdul the Butcher have hepatitis or something?
Hep C, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so that probably wasn't good for anybody. I don't know if he had it at this point in time, but
anybody that's ringside, they probably had the worst time more than anybody else. Then we went
Dad's mentioned that as well, that they cut to Rosenbloom, and his entire note sheet is now covered in blood, so now he's even more blind than he was before in terms of what he's supposed to know.
Then we go to one of those other grudge matches, which this card is announced in advance, pretty sure. Yet, we're supposed to believe that earlier in the day, Cowboy Bob Orton and Jimmy Snuka decided to have a card game because they're at the casino, and this is this poorly shot backstage bullshit, whatever, where this feud's about a card game that, you cheated. You did, I didn't, and whatever. And that's what they're going to fight about. Captain Lou Albano is with Jimmy Snuka, and he makes it a point to repeatedly say the exact same shit that he said earlier about how he's been in the business for 48 years. And since he's the commissioner of this great, amazing, wonderful, best thing ever that's ever happened, this is the best promotion that's ever existed. In 48 years, I've never seen something that's as great as this. Yes, I've been around for 48 years, and it's so great. I'm so great, glad to be commissioner. 48 years I've been around, you know, that thing. As commissioner, he's not going to have any favorites. So fuck you, Cowboy Bob Orton. I'm immediately backing Jimmy Snuka.
I mean, you know, it's first day on the job. He needs to get some level of consistency going, and he's not going to find it here because he's accompanying the babyface to the ring, and like he bigs up Snuka in the way that he can do. At the end of the day, Albano is a good talker. He's absolutely insane in terms of the way that he does talk, but it does have some value to it. Snuka just stays there silently.
Yeah.
and like, he's, he talks about, I didn't get this part, and maybe someone can educate me. He talks about, he bigs up the fact about Snuka can suplex from his knees.
Yeah.
Does that mean that Snooker's on his knees and he hits a suplex, or does that mean that he uses his knees to suplex someone? Because I imagine that was part, like, in some level, you're using your knees to suplex someone.
Both. And this is the match where Dutch Mantel just goes, fuck this guy, this Randy Rosenbloom, and is essentially just saying, you don't know anything about what you're talking about, shut up.
This isn't some UCLA basketball game that you're hosting, this is professional wrestling. Anything goes.
Because Rosenbloom had tried to say the equivalent of, these two have been feuding for so long that they know each other very well. There are no surprises between what they're going to be attacking each other with. And Dutch Mantel is basically like, fuck you, they can do anything. Didn't you see anything that happened earlier? God damn it. There's always a surprise, motherfucker. Shut up.
Yeah, he's clearly getting super frustrated at this point and just like completely goes off on him. And yeah, so this match, so it's Jimmy Snuka against Bob Orton, and they've built up the grudge about the card going. And this match is probably the first in history to feature a 10-minute hammerlock. Because literally, besides the first about 30 seconds and the last minute or so, this whole match is Bob Orton putting some kind of arm lock on Jimmy Snuka, just holding it, just waiting, just holding it forever and ever and ever.
Makes you appreciate Randy Orton a lot more, doesn't it?
I know where he got it from now, for fuck's sake. Apple doesn't fall that far from the tree. But God damn it, this is... I'll tell you what, watching this show, this must make you appreciate that Crown Jewel show from 2018 more, right? Or 2019, or whatever it was.
It does. Because we could also say that this is a match where the fans start chanting...
We can't say it.
Bob's... let's put it this way. Bob's A, and it's a word that starts with an F and rhymes with maggot. And... Yeah. I did not expect Dutch Mantel to be the one that says, hey, it's not nice to chant something about someone's sexual orientation. expect that to be the case, that he's like, hey, come on, man, that's not cool.
it's just so, like, clearly there is just some kids. I mean, it's Mississippi. Again, I don't live in the area, but I can stereotype with the best of them. Mm-hmm. So I'm just assuming that there is... some sex people that are probably just so bored and looking to entertain themselves at this point, so they just start chanting that bubble and because he's the heel, and so they feel like he can get away with it. But yeah, this just, I'd say it wouldn't fly. That's definitely something that fits into Attitude Era, like WWF. That's, I imagine that was something enjoyed at people at multiple house shows. But yeah, it's just this section of people that just gets picked up on the audio. And it's hard to listen to nowadays.
Especially in the context of 2022, where, I mean, you know, back in the day, that sort of the homophobia was more tolerated and, you know, it had this different kind of contexture about it where people were like, oh, you know, it's supposed to whatever. But, you know, we've progressed as a society where it's like, all right, that's not cool. And
but it's just like, so again, through 2022 eyes, like they're chanting that at Bob Orton Jr. when there is a literal alleged murderer in the ring, right? Society.
And he's the baby face.
Yeah. Just, yeah. And so I have to say that I think that if they, I think that Snuka was probably too far gone at this match, especially at this point. I mean, everyone who's wrestled on the show is pretty much too far gone at this point. But Snuka was probably the style that he wrestled meant that he was so limited in what he could do here. But I think that Orton probably could have had a more old school style good match with someone.
If it would have been like him against Tully, maybe.
Yeah, I think that could have just worked out. It wouldn't have been great. It would have still been slow and methodical, but I feel like they would have at least put something more coherent together. Whereas this is just literally an arm lock on Snuka for the vast majority of the match, and then Snuka makes a comeback. Albano distracts him, distracts Orton for a little bit.
Yeah, he holds Snuka's legs down so Orton can't hit the superplex.
Yeah, and then he gets hit with a crossbody and gets pinned. So,
which they make a point of being like, yeah, they've been like 10 or 12 feet up in the air for that.
like 2 feet, maybe.
Yeah. he more so fell, but...
Yeah. He had 2 feet off the ground for about 2 seconds. That's the best he can say about that crossbody.
And for anybody that says, too, that we're being too harsh on, like, the older guys doing that, don't wrestle when you get to a certain age. Like, just, like, you want to relive your heyday and you want to do that stuff, and that's understandable. You know, Ric Flair recently with his last match, that he's basically just like, if I'm not wrestling, I'm so fucking depressed and whatever, which is really sad. But it just... you completely burn off your goodwill because there's only a certain amount that you can really go, okay, look, we'll give them a little bit of credit for that. We'll give them a little bit of credit for that. We'll give them a little bit of credit for that, to the point where you go, God damn it, just don't do it. Like, I don't want the Undertaker in 20 years to try to wrestle.
Mm. Do you know what's sad about this to a degree? Well, I say sad about this, but sort of just also amazing to a degree. Bob Orton Jr. in this match is 2 years younger than Chris Jericho is now.
Wow.
Mm.
Holy shit.
Which, adding to the growing body of evidence that Chris Jericho is one of, if not the greatest to ever do
it. I mean, yeah. Holy shit. How old is Cowboy Bob Orton now?
He is currently,
I think, 70s, right?
71.
Hmm.
So, yeah. So he's 71. Jericho is 51 at this point. So, yeah. So at the time that Orton wrestled in his match, he was 49 years old.
Apparently, Orton and Snuka had another match 10 years after this.
Yeah, in 2009.
Maybe
it was a big reunion show.
God, I don't want to watch that match.
I almost want to know how many wrestlers on this show that were like the quote-unquote legends were actually younger than Chris Jericho.
Man, credit to Jericho, though. Holy shit. Because Jericho is performing at a level that, you know, I mean, he's on par or better than people that are less than half his age. Even.
And don't get me wrong, like, again, especially because a lot of these guys wrestled in the 80s and 90s, the lifestyle was a lot different. And also, Jericho has just kept in better shape, and he had to keep in better ring shape to keep up. So, again, advancing medicine, advances in just health routines and stuff like that, it does play a part. But, it is just quite incredible that, like, he might even be considered at this point in time, like, too over the hill to appear on this show. But you never know.
Then we get to this backstage promo. Jake.
It's the highlight of, well, I say highlight, but it's probably the thing that most people have seen from this entire show.
It's what puts it on the map for sure. Yeah. This promo backstage with Jake the Snake Roberts. And if you've not ever listened to this, you really should. He is very, very inebriated. It is obvious. And his promo is, since they're in a casino, you don't want to play cards with me because I cheat. He kind of repeats a lot of these things here and there. You want to play 21? I got 22. You want to play blackjack? I got two of those too. You want to play aces and eights? I got too many of those too. And the idea of this, if he was sober, this could have been a cool fucking promo. The idea of, hey, if you want to play 21 blackjack with me, I've got a 22 caliber gun. You got something there. Mm-hmm. Like, man, you don't want to fuck around with me because, you know, things will get serious. But it is a train wreck. And people use that phrase a lot for just like things that are like, ah, it's a little bad. No, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And he is pointing at the snake. The camera points down and he's all like, hey, cameraman, fucking point up here and pay attention to me. And he tries to get a DDT chant going on. It's mumbling, incoherent nonsense. Really? I don't know how you see the condition that he's in and you let him go out there.
Yeah. So the whole premise of booking Jake Roberts at this point, as he had been working some independent shows, not obviously super frequently, but he was on one of his, at the time, short-lived periods of sobriety. He fell off the wagon pretty much in the build-up to this show. And, yeah, by the time he comes up here, he is just so completely out of it. Whether it's alcohol, whether it's whatever else he might have been taking, it's just, he's in a sorry state. I mean, you talk about fucking Jeff Hardy at Victory Road and all that stuff. It's like, this guy is levels and levels above that. But, yeah, I think it's something that we can look back on and, I don't say joke about, but still, but, like, take some comfort in the fact that he did turn his life around.
Yeah.
And he's still here today, and he had that nice, gets to have that, oh no, he seemingly is gone now, but had that nice little closing run in AEW just to be, obviously not the wrestler Jake Roberts, but to be Jake Roberts again for a little while. And so we can look back at that and just feel like, okay, at least it does turn out right in the end. But at this moment in time, it's like, it's just one of the saddest, sorriest states that you can ever see someone be in. Like a guy who is at rock bottom and doesn't know how to prevent himself from keep digging. He's just going further and further down. And this entire segment and then leading into the quote-unquote match that follows is just... I mean, it goes from being just a bad wrestling show, like a show with just some bad wrestling, bad production, bad commentary, just all that, into an infamously horrible scene.
It's really...
It takes a standard bad, forgettable show into being a legendarily bad show.
Yeah, to really sad levels of just, man, this is supposed to be a show about legacy, and instead this is ruining a legacy. Because it's supposed to be Jake the Snake Roberts against Jim the Anvil Neidhart, or Jim the Neidhart Anvil, whatever you want to call him. And when Jake comes out, he seemingly doesn't even know where he is. He goes back and leaves. He comes back out. He grabs a woman's hands from the crowd and starts rubbing his nipples with her hands.
He essentially, like, she smiles and laughs at him, but you can kind of tell that she's...
uncomfortable.
She's not into it.
Yeah.
Like, he essentially sexually assaults a woman in the crowd. It's going really well. Essentially, he walks to the ring carrying whatever snake that he's loaned out for this one in the bag. And then he just puts the bag in the corner and just walks back up, pretty much like probably to say to the promoter, it's like, are you sure? Like, or something like that. It's like, yeah, I can't really do this. And then he comes out with his, like, the shirt that he was wearing. He's taken off. So he's like basically being told, get the fuck out there and do this. Like, we're paying you. And so he just walks out briskly and, yeah, does the stuff with the woman outside. And, yeah, Neidhart at this point, like, in a way, I feel bad for Neidhart, but I've also watched, documentaries on this talking about how much of an asshole Neidhart was at this point in his career, especially towards this match, because he basically said to the promoter, yeah, I'm not jobbing because WWE wants to sign me again, and so I can't lose because that'll make me look bad in front of WWF.
To his credit, he's one of the only people that looks like he's in shape.
Yeah, at least he looks good. Like, he looks like a guy who thinks the WWF is about to come sign him.
Right.
Spoiler alert, they don't.
Yeah.
Well, but they kind of do. He goes to one of their like developmental territories, I think, as a part-time worker / trainer type thing, but he never comes back in the actual quote unquote wrestling fold. I think his next match in on Raw is that 15th anniversary Raw Battle Royal they did. And so yeah, but he was by most people's accounts this like a total dick at this time. But Roberts is beyond being a dick and just a liability at this point.
I'm trying to see on Cage Match where Jim Neidhart might have been around right after this point. So this is October 1999. The next match he would have is on MCW Memphis TV.
Yeah.
He teams with Blue Meanie against ? And K Crush.
Yeah, so that was the so the MCW was Memphis Championship Wrestling, and that was a WWE feeder territory at this point in time.
Yeah, so it seems like he basically feuded with the Masked Man and Blue Meanie around that time frame, and there's, you know, I mean, he pops up for ECCW, TRCW, I've never even heard of some of these things, BCW, NFW, NEPW. He's just, for a few years, he goes around, wrestles 2-3 matches a year, essentially, for, you know, some guest spots here and there. Teamed with Natty at one point.
Yeah, he wrestled quite a lot in 2007. So,
It doesn't look like he did any more other than that 15th anniversary Battle Royal.
Nothing on a major scale, anyway, prior to his unfortunate passing.
Well, he beat Jay Lethal on an episode of Impact.
1 minute 30 seconds. Huh. Fucking hell.
So that's a thing.
Just a one-off match on Impact where you just squash one of your X Division guys and just move on.
His final match was with teaming with Coco Beware and Frankie the Pizza Guy against Clay Drasher, Sean Andrews, and Nikolai Volkov.
Fucking hell, Nikolai Volkov. Still going into
2016.
Yeah, but 2016 was still going as well. For two guys in the show.
BCW Night of Legends. So another attempt that incorporated Bushwhacker Luke.
Hey.
And Greg Hammer Valentine.
God, these guys just don't know where to quit.
Wow, holy shit. I'm not seeing any of the Samoan SWAT team on here, but...
I like the main event of it. It's like, it's Greg Valentine, Honky Tonk Man, and Tito Santana versus Hollywood's Finest, which is ... and Laszlo Arpad.
That's the main event. Yeah. So, I mean, it didn't work out for Jim Neidhart, but, you know, before we get too much into this, we got to talk about the idea that Jake Roberts pulls the snake out,
mm-hmm.
puts it between his crotch, and starts mimicking that he's jerking himself off.
Yeah, so... It's a kid show. Fun for the whole family. Do not work with children or animals. It's essentially... Yeah, they do some, like, just really boring, horrid wrestling to start with Roberts trying to do some stuff. He immediately just goes for the snake. Neidhart battles out the ring. And, yeah, he starts treating the snake like it's his penis. And he's just jerking it around. And then they cut the camera to basically anybody in the crowd. Just, like, any bored, vacant, staring face in the crowd. Just for a while. They cut back to the ring. And now the snake's on top of Jake Roberts. And he's trying to French kiss it. It's like just licking it, and it's so grotesque. It's like it's a guy who is descending into, I don't say madness, but just descending into oblivion before your very eyes.
Which prompts King Kong Bundy to come out.
Yeah.
Because he had said earlier, I'll take care of that snake, because he's involved in, what a nice guy.
Mm.
He volunteers to help out the other heel in a match that he has absolutely nothing to do with, because he comes out and he's eventually followed by Yokozuna, and this just becomes a tag team match.
I'm surprised that he needs to be followed by Yokozuna. I'm surprised, considering the size of him, that Yokozuna, we couldn't see Yokozuna all night.
Yokozuna is... This might be the biggest that he ever got, I think.
I don't know. I wonder if it's... I don't think it's his last match. I don't think it is. But it's coming up.
I think it's at least his last pay-per-view match. I don't know if he did any like indie stuff outside of that.
This is his final match.
It's, you know, I mean,
What a match to end on.
I love Yokozuna. That's the time frame that I was really, like, you know, digging my nails into being a wrestling fan, was that new generation, early Attitude Era type of time frame. So Yokozuna has a special place in my heart as, like, one of the quintessential super heavyweight, if I think WWF championship, like, a lot of the times I'll think of, like, that, you know, Yoko to Brett kind of transition or whatever. If I think casket match at this point, even still, somebody says to me, think of a casket match, I think, okay, it's Undertaker versus Yokozuna. Yokozuna, I'm a big, big fan of. It is incredibly sad to see the position that he's in right here, because he makes the Yokozuna from like 93 look slim in comparison. Mm. He can't walk around in the same way, in any means.
Yeah, he's about, he's circling around about the 700-pound mark at this point.
Yeah.
And, yeah, looks every single pound of that. He's just absolutely huge, and Bundy's big, but nowhere near that big. And so... there's a lot of like confusion about this, because there are some people that suggest that this was just impromptu. Okay, this semi-main is a complete train wreck. Let's turn this into a tag team match instead. And then there are some that suggest that it was always going to turn into a tag team match, and they just decided to fast forward it to this point. Or it was supposed to be a case that Roberts and Neidhart was supposed to end in some kind of fuck finish, and then it would lead to the tag team match with the other guys coming out, which is why you had Neidhart and Bundy do that promo together. So again, it's not entirely certain about what the case happens, but what is certain, or what we do know, is the fact that when they did put this match together and it turned into a tag match, the referee had no idea what the finish was going to be, because every single person in this match had refused to do the job. In fact, as part of the, as what we were talking about earlier, both Yokozuna and King Kong Bundy had written into their contracts that they would not be pinned in these matches.
Yeah, so the main event is between two guys that can't lose.
Yep.
And a guy who can't lose, and a guy who can't even tell you that he's there.
Yeah, so... So it leads into this god awful fuck fest of a tag match, which is, and did you notice Mini Bundy out there?
Yeah, I wrote down, who is this bald fuck?
So that's
Michael Henry.
Michael Henry. He was the booker Lombardi's, like, he's like the guy that helps like book a load of the talent and brainstorm ideas and helped do a lot of like the side work, and he just came out in order to basically tell everyone, yeah, this is all going so badly south, let's try and salvage what we can out of this and get the hell out of here. And so they turn it into a tag match, and Yokozuna spends pretty much the vast majority of the match on the apron, which is somehow supporting his weight considering what I imagine the quality of the ring is. And it's just Roberts getting worked over for ages and drunkenly stumbling about until he makes a hot tag, and Yokozuna just does stuff for a while, but like basically every time he moves, you can feel ripples across the entire state of Mississippi, probably at that point. And he's just, yeah, he just goes after one of the guys. He goes after Neidhart for a bit and just starts moving. And so Bundy knocks down Roberts and just splashes him. And even though both of the guys aren't legal men, the referee just counts quickly, forces Roberts to stay down, and they just get the fuck out of there. Yeah, it's depressingly bad that's what you closed the show on. I mean, it's not the
full close or the whole thing, but that's their idea of the main event that's going to sell that you can do more of these in the future. And the big, like, we're leading up to this, folks. So Bundy pins Jake. I wrote down, fucking trash, this is so hard to watch. And then after that, to try to send the people home happy and try to make semblance of the idea that maybe this Michael Henry guy screwed things over in some way or whatever. I don't know. King Kong Bundy is out of the thing. Jim Neidhart's out of the thing, but Michael Henry's there. So Yokozuna decides that he wants to try to call for, hey, we never got the DDT. Give him a DDT. Give this Michael Henry guy a DDT. And Jake does not seem to understand what he's trying to get at. So Yoko sends him to the ropes, picks him up for a Samoan drop. Jake puts the snake on him. And instead of, I don't know, oh, well, they got some, you know, finish back on that guy and whatever. We'd like to see what this is going. Tune in next time for the next Heroes of Wrestling event. We hope that we see you there or whatever. It just sort of fades out to a graphic about information or like the website, which isn't around anymore. It was like scoopswrestling.com. And then it fades back in for a moment to show Yokozuna trying to help Jake the Snake up. And then it just ends.
Yeah. So I think it was just a very deliberate attempt to cut away as quickly as possible because they had no idea what Roberts was going to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided, okay, we need to just cut our losses and cut the feed. I think the show is only like 2.5 hours long, where most wrestling pay-per-views at the time are going 3 hours. Thank God this didn't go 3 hours.
Like I said, I couldn't watch it in one sitting. It took me 4 times.
I know. But it was just, yeah, that's just an absolutely depressing way to end it. This poor guy who's not a wrestler has to take a Samoan drop from a 700-pound guy. Fortunately, Yokozuna does seemingly protect him well enough.
Yeah.
It probably was a lot safer than letting Roberts do the DET on him. because that could have gone all kinds of wrong.
Maybe too, yeah. I mean, Yokozuna is not in the right shape to be able to be doing almost anything, but he seems to at least have his wits about him, and that's something that you can't say for Jake.
Yeah, but you kind of have to say that, even though I'd say, from my own sensibilities, I think the Volkov Sheik versus the Bushwhackers match is worse than this one, just from pure wrestling perspective. This is like the, it almost feels like, and again, maybe I haven't seen every single aspect of wrestling, and there's lots of terrible things that happen in wrestling, but just from a pure ring wise, like an actual just like show perspective, this feels like the lowest point that wrestling ever got to. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but it feels like just from just as a match and a segment and something that happened just on a show that's scripted and put together, not like a death or anything on those lines, not the one of those tragedies, but just like something that's purely storyline, well, purely storyline, but then affected by outside influences. This is about as low as it gets.
There's nothing to defend on this.
No.
This is fucking terrible. And not even in that so bad that it's fun kind of way. It's just not good. And some of it could have been avoided. Some of it couldn't. I'm sure that the people that were responsible for booking some of this talent assumed that they were going to be able to do better than what they brought to the table. And again, I like, some of it on paper doesn't sound like it would be all that bad for like a little indie legends wrestling cheapo event, but nothing works from top to bottom. Every promo, every segment, the way that the, I mean, I'm surprised that the ring didn't fucking collapse, or yeah, you got this, you can't even hear the music when these people come out. Yeah, but of course it's not
just, yes, it's come out to the same thing pretty much
seemingly, yeah, because they can't use, you know, Yokozuna's not gonna come out with the Yokozuna theme. You can't even use the name, so you're missing that element of the pageantry and, you know, the flair of the sports entertainment aspect of it too. No moves are good. It doesn't make anybody look better. It only tarnishes their appearance. And it unfortunately is the last show for certain people. So it ends up being just like, not that it's like, oh, if they would have avoided this, what else would have happened? But like,
well, just like the sad thing about that main event, well, the sad and seemingly astonishing thing about that main event is that there are four guys in that match. Three of them are gone. And you won't believe the one that's still alive if you just watch this match.
Mm-hmm. Jake Roberts, the only one that's still around.
Yeah. And I like the way that someone on the review that I read of it puts it. It's like, everyone but Jake Roberts is still alive from this. And that is why DDP is the true hero of wrestling.
This is bad.
It was worth it, right? It was worth it, right?
I don't know if we can even call it that.
We got a show out of it.
Yeah, that's true.
What are we going to do?
We got an hour and a half talking about the 2.5 hour long complete shit fest.
Rob got to avoid it. That's something that you can take away from this.
Or Rob watched it and didn't even get a chance to talk about it.
Fuck yeah, he watched it. And but really, that's what I got out of it. I think like I say, probably the worst wrestling pay-per-view that's ever happened. And I've seen a lot of terrible pay-per-views. I've watched as part of like the Paul Heyman, not Paul Heyman SmackDown, but the
2001 Wrestling Odyssey.
Yeah, 2001 Wrestling Odyssey. I watched the WWA shows, the World Wrestling All-Stars shows from Australia, which were just god-awful. And I've seen things from women's extreme wrestling and like awful stuff from the dying days of WCW. Fucking WWE just a couple of years ago, or like even just a year plus ago, choosing some of the worst shit that you ever see. Such uncreative, unfulfilling terribleness, all that stuff from TNA back in their absolute worst days, and this is just a solid level below all of that. Like, there's all of that terrible stuff, there's seven layers of shit, there's rock bottom, and then there's this stuff. And yeah, that's where it comfortably sits. And I think you'll be damn hard, it'd be damn hard for a show to just stoop to the level this one did. But I feel like the reason why we do these, like Mr. Smart thing, is because I think this is essential viewing.
Yeah.
For wrestling fans.
It basically is, because it's, not only is it one of those things that is infamous, but it also does give you context of, like, yeah, Crown Jewel, back when Braun Strowman lost to Brock Lesnar and they booked all these weird things and these matches sucked and the World Cup was stupid and all that. That was shit, but at least it was a show where you could go, look, the wrong decisions were made, or, you know, this came up short compared to what we, you know, we're kind of spoiled these days for a lot of wrestling matches where it's like an average match on Monday Night Raw is better than what we would get, you know, 30 years ago, you know, on like one of the best pay-per-views. But even those shows that end up being like, oh man, Backlash isn't so fun, or Full Gear is kind of blah, or whatever it might be, are infinitely better than these, because they at least are trying. Meanwhile, this is actively crapping on the legacies that it's supposed to be building up. There are only negatives that come out of this. There are no positives. The whole of everybody involved and the wrestling landscape and everything would have been better off if this didn't exist.
Yeah, I would probably agree to that. Yeah, apart from Julio Fantastico getting some more bookings off the back of this, other than that, it just feels like, yeah, the absolute worst of wrestling and a bunch of guys who were legends in the heyday completely soiling their reputations for a final payday, which I guess in their minds may have been worth it, but overall it's just, I mean, this is wrestling history. This is history brought to life and the demonstration that nostalgia isn't always cracked up to be.
I hope the payday was good at least.
Yeah, well, as far as I can tell from all I've read about it, everyone did get paid. Like, no one got shifted on that. Even Jake Roberts got paid for what he did. And so, yeah, and apparently he sent like a letter of apology to the bros and stuff like that. And I assume he does feel remorse for that now that he's back, like, clean, sober, and trying to steer away from all that stuff now. But I think that, yeah, at the end of the day, I think even though it was promoted by a guy who clearly had no idea what he was doing and put together an awful show with poor production quality and booked people that were just way too past their prime to present anything resembling good wrestling, I think he's had the best of intentions.
Yeah.
And I think that he treated the people right. And so I think he should take at least some modicum of credit for, even though he produced what is likely the worst wrestling show of all time, at least he didn't screw anyone over in the process.
It could have just been like, well, I'm not going to pay for this person and I'm not going to do that, and we're going to switch the card up because we don't want to incorporate that person, instead of being like, all right, fuck, we can't get that person anymore, so let's try to figure something out.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, they, as I said earlier, they broke even on this show, like with the pay-per-view buys and the attendance and the people that did pay to attend and all that stuff. It was, yeah, so they did, like, there was nothing lost. Like, it's like nothing ventured, nothing gained. Like, they didn't lose out of anything here, beyond obviously some of the wrestlers' reputations probably taking a battering for a little while, and Roberts in particular. But I think that it was an experiment which went horribly wrong, but nobody suffered long-term ramifications off the back of it beyond the people that watched it that then just couldn't forget ever watching it. But I think that, like, at the end of the day, we'll look back at it and feel like, yeah, this was, it's a horrible thing that we'll never want to go back to and watch again. But I kind of feel better having seen it. I know, obviously, I'd seen it before this as well, so I was watching it for the second time, but it is, there is something about it. There's a certain weird charm about it. It's not The Room. It's not that kind of, like, it's so bad, it's good thing. But there's a certain charm and feeling of it that you kind of feel like, okay, I had to watch this. There was something about it which made me know that this is a show that I have to watch, regardless of how bad it is.
It's history, like you said. So it's something that I do think, I'm very glad that I've seen it too. despite how rough it was to get through it, because it's given me more context and everything. And, you know, I've seen the promo from Jake Roberts, but I hadn't seen the awful Iron Sheik match, and I hadn't seen just how generally bad everything was. But I'm curious to see if we, I don't know if we could, and I don't know about it, like, as far as the scheduled goes, if we even have the time for it, but I'm curious to see if we ever could, like, fantasy book a modern Heroes of Wrestling. If we could be like, you know, who would we get for doing that if we could right now? You know, who is, like, the older guy that would be able to, you know, try to wrestle, or somebody who could, you know, if we go into the side of things of trying to make as bad as it is, then how could we make another bad version of this or something? Might be something to explore in the future. I don't know. That's something to keep in mind for even when it comes to, like, the Patreon, you know, the Pick Your Poison tier that's on there. If you've got ideas of what you'd like to see us do in the future, that is another episode of Mrs. Mark, that you're like, you have to watch this pay-per-view, you have to watch this match, or check out this promo from back in the day, or whatever it might be. That's the whole point of Mrs. Mark, but there's plenty of other things that you can request. Yeah. And, you know, that's a great way to make sure that we do that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that giving us the incentive to watch other bad shows or do something on the back of the bad shows through review would be, yeah, definitely something that we'd look forward to. I would say, though, so we've done Mrs. Mark now. Let's say it's the three times that we remember. So we've done this, done December to Dismember, and we've done No Holds Barred. We need to do something good next time.
Yeah, we do. Right? We do need to do something that's on the good side.
So I don't know what that is, what that would be, or whether what we do is good, but I think we need to do something that at least has the potential to be somewhat entertaining beyond just the sheer crappiness of what we're watching.
Yeah, just something that's, my God, this is one of the best shows that's ever happened that one of us hadn't seen that before, or something that maybe it's even like a movie thing, kind of like the No Holds Barred. Maybe it's supposed to be a really good thing, although I can't think of anything that would come across that's good on that front.
I probably have a few ideas, but yeah, there's a few ideas rattling in the brain of what stuff that I know happened, but I don't recall ever seeing, and stuff like that that would pique my interest.
Yeah, so if you have suggestions, drop them in the comments below. Tell us what you think. Make sure that if you do want to join the Pick Your Poison tier and specifically request something, then you've got the option for that on there on Patreon, or the join button on YouTube. That gives you access to the same channel membership stuff as the Darkcast. And, you know, the $1 tier is even another great means to help us out. There's that little thanks button as well on YouTube. If you want to pick up some merchandise on TeePublic and Redbubble, that is where you can find that. And of course, just by listening to this episode, that helps out quite a bit too. But if you want to pass this along for anybody that you think might be interested in hearing our review of Heroes of Wrestling, then click that share button and send us their way. If I were giving this a rating, I mean, it's like a 0.5 out of 10 or something. This is really awful. I don't do ratings all that much, but I understand why it's got such a low rating, and I fully agree with you. We need to watch something good. So we will do that on whenever the next Mrs. Mark is. But as far as the next couple of episodes that are coming for Smack Talk, we know that we're going to have a Hot Tags later on this week, where we'll talk about some debunked AEW people going to WWE stuff at this point. And we got Candice LeRae returning on Monday Night Raw, and that's very cool. And coming up after the Hot Tags on this next week and this stretch that we get into October and such, we know we're going to have Extreme Rules coming up. So that'll be the next pay-per-view show that we talk about. We got the mailbag coming up for Q4 in around mid-October. Maybe some kind of a mock draft randomizer. We might think about maybe doing that around the 19th. Halloween Havoc is coming up. We got Crown Jewel, we've got some Survivor Series content, Full Gear, a lot of different things that are going to be revolving around that kind of fall range. I'll probably do another Champsgiving tournament around October, November or so. And, you know, we've got a little bit of blank spots in December, so you know, if you have any ideas of what you'd like to see us doing going forward that aren't necessarily part of the Pick a Poison tier, that's another thing to let us know about that so we can take that into consideration. But we do hope that you enjoyed at least this episode of Missed the Smark. And we want to thank you for listening to that. And if you want to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SmarkOutMoment, go to SmarkOutMoment.com and check out everything that's happening there. Go to amangotree.com and see all the things that are up on that list of links. We're AnthonyMango.com, same kind of thing. And one of those things being Fanboys Anonymous, plenty of movies and stuff that I will be talking about on over on that geek culture website. And you can follow me at Tony Mango to see whatever else I'm up to and to see that little verified check mark on Twitter. That's pretty cool. Make sure that you're following Callum as well, though.
Yeah, I don't have the blue check mark yet, and I don't think I ever will. I definitely don't tweet enough to be considered for it. And that's, you know, maybe one day my efforts will be recognized with that little note of appreciation. But you can still follow me on Twitter at Wigmeister14. Check out the very few times that I do tweet and or follow along there. But you're more likely to see things, my ramblings on the Smark and Memo website, particularly the power rankings, my week-to-week contribution every single Saturday. So check that out there. And you can also follow along with the Fantasy League, also at WWEFantasyLeague.com, where you can find the latest standings, who's been picking up points for their teams on a week-to-week basis, and if I'm able to eventually claw back the gap to Tony.
The gap's creating again?
It's been pretty consistent. We're around about like 50, 60 points apart, like pretty consistently week to week. So it's closer than it was. So maybe I'll claw it back a little bit more. All we know for certain is Rob's not winning.
Check out what Rob's up to over there at Dude Felice, by the way. And as I said before, I'm going to try to get his opinions about this either in like the comments or maybe we'll
talk about it in the hot tags. Just give him a little bit of a soapbox hot tags for like 5-10 minutes. Talk about it.
Maybe the hot tags. Maybe you're in a dark cast or something. Mm. We'll figure it out. But you guys will be able to listen to that or check that out whenever that happens. But that's been our opinions about Miss the Smark episode 3, I think, Heroes of Wrestling. Go ahead and check it out if you haven't already. Witness the terrible stuff that we did. We suffered through it. You should too. But we will see you next time, everybody, for the hot tags. Until then, this has been another Smark Out Moment, and we are being counted out.